Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Space Jams podcast. This is your host, Jim Murphy, and today we have a very special guest with us, Professor Nicola Peter from the International Space University, one of my fantastic professors. And today we're going to talk a little bit about new space, a little bit about space companies and the space industry and how it's changing. Just to start off, little introduction for Nicola Peter. Nicola Peter is a professor of practice in space policy and international affairs at the International Space University. He is the head of the newly created Space Policy and Entrepreneurship Lab at ISU that is a dedicated research laboratory addressing the issue and trends in the domains of space policy and the space economy, including new space worldwide. Prior to his appointment at ISU, Mr. Peter has been the first head of the international affairs at German Aerospace Center, DLR, that is the National Research Institute for Aeronautics and Space, and acts on behalf of the German government as the German Space Agency. The department has its main office in Cologne and oversees offices in Paris, Tokyo, and Washington, D.C. Nicola Peter has also been working at the European Commission Space Policy and Research Unit, working on various topics such as planning of the Horizon 2020, coordinating space policy studies, and supporting the 2016 EC Space Strategy Development. He has also been working at ESA in the Director General's Cabinet and Strategy Department on the development of Agenda 2015. Mr. Peter has 20 plus years of international experience in S&T policy on 4 continents and 8 countries. He has published over 100 reports, books, chapters, and articles in peer-reviewed journals and presented at international conferences related to space activities. He has also co-edited 3 books on space affairs and is a regular peer reviewer for the journals Space Policy and Acta Astronautica. But let's hear from the man himself, Nicola Peter. How are you doing today? It's great to have you here.
Good, thank you, Jim. So I'm doing fine, and I must say I'm really honored to be on your show. Especially, it's hard to speak after the previous guest speaker you had, Christina Kaur, in November. That was like a really cool show. I hope we can have also today a nice show.
Of course, yeah, one great guest after the other. We're super excited to talk to you today, specifically about, you know, new space companies, because the term new space is getting thrown around left and right in the industry today, and there's no real firm definition. And as you know, I'm doing my own research into this, trying to come up with my own definition, but you know, I think myself and all the listeners would really like to hear from a veteran about what they think new space is. And hopefully we're going to get into that today. So it'll be really exciting.
Yeah, that's the 1 billion, you know, whatever currency you have, euro, dollars, yen question. I think it's very relevant because we've seen, especially in the space sector, we talked about, you know, the space economy, what it is, the global space sector and so on. But we tend to forget that, you know, space is really pervasive to every part of our lives. It impacts everything we do, especially in the Western part of the world. So the space economy is definitely bigger than the space sector. And we really see the sector changing. Space is key to the economy, but it's not mainstream yet. It's becoming mainstream. One example. You know, you had a few days ago, I think it was in Austin, the CES, which is the big consumer and electronic show, and was for the first time space was there. So you can see that space is becoming mainstream in that type of activity. That nonetheless, it's important to a variety of activities, and that's what is important to realize, and we need also to look into the impact of the sector on the stock market. There are different dimensions to see that space is really becoming part of the society, even though most of the people do not realize that yet. And that begs the question, what is a space company, would you say, no? Because that's everyone talk about new space, you know, we all know the big traditional aerospace company, but what is a space company? And that's something that is even more interesting, is to realize that depending on the sector, you could have company that you never thought of that are heavily involved in space. And I would just pick maybe a couple of examples for the listeners so that they understand what I'm talking about. Because you can take example in agriculture, transport, energy, but also example in Europe, in the US, and in Asia, to really show that that sometimes it's blurry to see who is a space company. And if I take your country, John Deere, it's a US agriculture farming giant, one of the biggest companies in this domain. But it's a company that is doing space since the 90s. So really the 90s.
Really?
And it started to use with the Starfire network. That is a satellite-based augmentation system of real-time accuracy to be able to provide better solution for its crop monitoring. But now it's also thinking about using more and more GNSS, so Global Navigation Satellite System, to be able to make sure if you want to have the future trucks, humongous, not trucks, but you know vehicles you have on the field that are like super efficient in terms not only on that they can drive on a straight line and things like that. So here, directly with the space sector, it's one domain that's for agriculture. Another one maybe closer to where you sit right now in Europe, it's a company called HERE. HERE, it's a company that a lot of the people use when they drive, if you have a navigation system in your car, but it's the one providing the map. So most also for some of the devices such as phones and things like that. But what is interesting, it's a company that is owned by a consortia of German car manufacturers. So BMW, Daimler, Audi, but also Intel. And that's a company that is using space data to augment the map you have in your car. And that's going to be super relevant in the future if you want to have automated driving, because you need accurate positioning, but you need also to be accurate maps for your system. But then if you talk about the space, you know, also the automotive sector, now if you go to China, there is a giant automaker, Geely, that plan to have his own constellation of navigation and connectivity for self-driving cars, so V2V, vehicle to vehicle, or vehicle V2X, vehicle to X. Is that a space company? So it's an automotive industry, automotive manufacturer that is developing his own satellite constellation for its industry. And the last one, ExxonMobil. So it's one of the largest publicly traded oil and gas company that announced just before the end of last year, so December 2021, that it has agreed to work with a company called Scepter Inc. to deploy satellite solution to detect methane emission at global scale. So they want to have a satellite to be launched in 2023 and are planned to increase to more than 24 satellites over the next 3 years. So is that a space company? That's the question I would ask, because we all know the big guys all over the, you know, in Japan, in China, in Europe, in the US. But with the few examples I gave, these companies, some of them are like major ones on the stock market, they do or develop space systems for their own needs that are not done by the traditional Boeing, Lockheed, Airbus, Thales, Mitsubishi Heavy Industry, and so on. So that really shows that space is changing. And then on top of it, you have new space. But here, just with these four examples in three different sectors, you can see that it's blurry, the lines are blurring between what is space and non-space.
You know, you brought in so many different diverse companies that all involve space, but on the face of them seem to have nothing to do with space. And really, you know, this brings up the question, like, you know, what does it mean to be a space company? Yes, but also is it to the degree in which they're involved in space? Does that matter? Does they have to have a direct application in space? Do they have to be just making satellites? Do they have to be operating satellites? Do they have to be making rockets? Or can they just be using space-based infrastructures? This is the really interesting stuff.
It's really becoming the backbone of one part of the world, at least the one that is heavy relying on data. And also that is a transition towards a data economy. So they realize that they need their own networks. They need to be able to have an end-to-end system for certain activities. So some of the company outsource these capabilities. Some of these ones partner with space players. Some of these ones develop it on their own, depending on where they sit in their respective sector. Some might be more technology intensive than the other, but still, that really means that they take space seriously. In their company profile, company roadmaps, they have laid out for their shareholders that they need to create new value. And they realize that everyone expects to have connectivity everywhere. Everyone expects to be informed, to have the data, to be resilient. And that's why they need to build that in. If they do so, they can either do it through externalization, which is, you know, purchase a service, or develop it themselves. And that's a matter of internal company policy. But it's very interesting. It's a very new trend that is really impacting the space sector. And I would assume it will happen more and more in the future.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about the data economy. And the data economy itself, I think we could have an entire show talking about that. And I live within a data economy, certainly, from the United States, and the whole place is run by data and technology, and space is the fabric of that system. And so it's incredible, I think, how much people underestimate how connected their lives are to space. You know, most infrastructures today are rooted in space. They have connections in space. The new change, I think, that's very interesting is the one we're talking about today, where agencies used to be the ones pushing R&D, and they used to be ones producing rockets and making the satellites. Now, that's changing. You know, we're starting to see that companies are making their own rockets. Companies are making the satellites. They're launching them themselves. They're operating them themselves. And that's an incredible change in itself. That just shows how the industry is changing.
Well, indeed, there is what we can see since the turn of the century is really this, I would say, an internationalization of the space sector, but also globalization. Why internationalization? First, you had for a long time, you know, the geopolitical blocs, East versus the West, or the big players only. But then you can see that there are more and more new players being first hosted by states or states themselves being involved into that. But what is very interesting is to see, and that's why I talk also about globalization, it's not only about the North. You see a lot of new actors popping up in the South. Stellalogic, for instance, coming on the stock market in the US, coming from Argentina. So you can see that there are different innovation hubs around the world. And, you know, space is popping up in different places. Mauritius launched satellite with the help of the UN. Kenya, you know, that's some places where you're okay. The capability might be nimble at this stage, but nonetheless, they are getting there. And the same goes for the private sector.
So why didn't this happen 20 years ago? I mean, why are we now just in the middle of this, you know, private space company revolution, this boom of private space companies?
Yeah, there are different trends. There are different drivers, for these trends. One could be at a technological level, you know, the barrier to entry is lowering. It starts to be very easy to get reliable components that you can get either for the onboard processing, batteries, and so on. Some of the phone you might have in your pocket is maybe powerful enough or more powerful than most of the legacy satellites we had still in space working. And so you have this one, you have also the proliferation of possibility to access space. So that's also very much, you know, it's becoming a market. People start to know with the standardization of the CubeSats. So a lot of the students did that at university. They've seen it's not difficult to develop that. There are standardized processes. And also money. There have never been so much money overall. Since the Great Depression, since 2008, we can see a lot of money pouring into the economy, but also in the tech business, and people start to realize that space might be one of the avenues for growth, and that's why people want to get involved, and that's why government also supports those developments around the world.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's always a huge discussion around, does policy drive technology, or does technology drive policy when it comes to space? And I think, you know, since the 1980s, like the Reagan era, there was really a push in policy to help foster commercial space companies and just the private sector of space. And I think that's been ongoing since then, with things like the Commercial Space Launch Act of 2015 and even up till today. But these things don't get as much press, obviously, because, you know, it's not a fancy rocket launch. It doesn't look as beautiful, or Elon Musk isn't involved to it. But it definitely seems like, you know, government agencies like the United States are fostering space companies within their borders. And it seems like it's all for the better.
Yeah, and I think, especially if you talk about the U.S., I think people do not realize that much, that there's as much a support to R&D on the government side in the U.S. as well as innovation procurement initiatives, whereby the government is funding not the development but is serving as anchor customer, guaranteeing certain use of future capabilities, and not so much involved in the design. That means there is a more open competition for certain type of the work that is not necessarily critical, at least at the initial domain. But while in the 80s, and you've researched that, at the time industry was able to set the pace in terms of policy development, now you can see that the policy is trying to foster industry development. And that's very interesting, because especially in the Europe, we look at the US, but we don't necessarily understand that the ecosystem there, what's the context, the historical context, the capabilities are different. But indeed, the government has a role to play, as well as the private sector.
Yeah, I was doing some research, and a venture capital company called Space Angels, which essentially puts up seed money for startup tech companies and space companies. You know, this type of company didn't exist 30 years ago. This is like in the last 20 years where private sector money is finding its way into investing in space companies. This is huge. It's not just the governments that are investing in these companies. It's the private sector. And that's really different. And these companies, you know, the companies like Space Angels have been huge in helping foster growth for private space companies. So it's really important, and it's really cool. It's really new.
Yeah, and I think it is also important, and it's good that you talked about the business angel. I think also we see more private capital going into the sector, but also some of some players in the financial sector are being more aware or having more knowledge about the space sector, so they're becoming a bit more knowledgeable on the metrics you can use to assess what's a reliable business in the future. So we need to do more in the space sector to educate, and we can talk about that later on, the different type of investors, level and knowledge. But it's important to have that. We also see business angels popping up around the world. But what I see also, there's a transition. If we just talk now about new space, if we look about new space, it's not homogeneous. It depends from countries to countries, but also from epochs to epoch. And for me, I would say we're entering new space 2.0. I know everyone will say, okay, another, you know, binary codes and stuff like that, but I really see two waves of new space. The first one that started at the beginning of the century with companies such as SpaceX, Blue Origin, or even Rocket Lab that were created in the first decade, that developed capabilities and matured, went test product, go on the market, have revenues and so on. Then you had the beginning of the 2010s, you had Planet, you had Spire, this type of company. But now you can see that there's a trend, an acceleration. And now you have company going to the stock market that don't necessarily have revenues. And I call that the really new space 2.0. You have new companies like Astra in launch vehicle, ESAR, RFA in launch vehicle in Europe, but also I can give ISI, Capella Space, and so on in Earth observation, but also Constellation, where you see that new space 2.0, for me, it's more about blitz scaling. So that means now it's an arm, it's not an arm race. There's not a race for arms in space, but it's like a financial arms race to raise a lot of money to really scale up the development faster to the market, acquire more customer. And you can see space is capital intensive. We know that, but you can see that some of these big companies raise a lot of money. And that's maybe something we need to explain, is that yes, the overall amount of money raised in the sector has never been, private sector not being so high, but it's not an equal. There is not a level playing field. It's not equal. There's a lot of diversity, and I would call that the Pareto principle, with the 80-20 rule, where 20% of the startups get about 80% of the funding. You will ask why? Because the entry ticket in the sector, because we talk about business angel, we're talking about couple of 100,000 to maybe 1 million, whatever currency that is. And then you go Serie A, Serie B, Serie C. But the higher you go into financial rounds, the more, you know, the more expensive it becomes. And then that leads to certain valuation. You know, we talked about unicorns. We talk about decacorns, so company being valued more than 1 billion as a unicorn. Decacorn, Jim?
10 billion?
Exactly, but nowadays even an ectocorn,
which is 100 billion.
Exactly, which is SpaceX. And that people do not understand is that, okay, it's a valuation, but it's the second most valuable tech company in the world after ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok. So you have a company like SpaceX that is an ectocorn, but at the same time you have like startups that are like very small and nimble. That doesn't mean they will, I wish them luck, but new space and startup company, they are all, it's very heterogeneous. And that's the stuff also we have to be careful. And there are few major companies that are really driving, setting the pace. Some other one will need more time. That doesn't mean it will not be possible, but it's really this blitz scaling with the SPACs. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to look at it from the business model point of view. You know, what is a new space company really? I mean, in my own opinion, I guess a new space company is a company that sets out to stand alone, independent from a government agency. That should be the goal. Now, that's really hard to do, especially since government agencies tend to be one of the biggest users of space. So that can be, you know, the main buyer sometimes. But I think companies like Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, the older space companies, you know, they're that's traditional space. They're heavily reliant upon the government, the contracts. But new space like SpaceX or Virgin Galactic, Blue Origin, you know, the some of the bigger companies, but also like, you know, Virgin Orbit, Rocket Lab, these companies are setting themselves up to cater to a customer that isn't part of the government. And I think that's space 2.0 or 3.0. I'm not sure which one it is yet, but new space definitely focuses on the user, not necessarily catering to the government.
Yeah, that Jim, that's interesting. And because there is no clear definition of what new space is, and in the community we fight. Yeah, I would say we fight about that, because for some new space it's fringe, for some other it's mainstream, so it's difficult. But in order to take a bird's eye view on that, I would say maybe if you have new space versus incumbent, because I don't like the old space mentality, because it's almost pejorative, but it's more to look about maybe compared to other sectors. It's what is biotech to the health sector? What is also, for instance, if we take the aviation industry, where you have the evolution between the one building the planes and the one operating the planes, Southwest being a disruptor very much into the sector when it started, fighting against, at the time, legacy companies. The same in Europe, we have Ryanair, we have this type of company challenging the status quo with a different business model. The same in the in the IT sector with provider of mainframe computers, and then so hardware, very much hardware intensive, then going to personal computing, and then now to software based things. So they, it's simply an evolution of the business model that make it, and also something that I see coming, and I hope to see more and more, it's not the opposition, either or, but something what I, and maybe it's elusive, that's why maybe we should call them, you know, using methodology like centaurs, where you have the incumbent companies working with the new space companies. That the two working together, and we see that with, for instance, in the US, with a potential future commercial space station, where you have legacy companies working with new space. And that's, I think, that's interesting. That's the stuff we look like. And then you will see also that some of the new space company of the beginning are becoming mainstream. Mm. You know, Blue Origin is 20 years old.
Yeah.
He's now leading certain type of the proposal, so it's becoming mainstream. So is Blue Origin still a new space company? And that begs the question, what is new in new space?
I was going to say that, you know, it's important that we differentiate between new space, new space 2.0, new space 3.0, because, you know, we have companies like Blue Origin, if they're successful and they last long enough, where we will look back at them at one point and, you know, maybe the future generations will call them traditional space. But I think, yeah, we have to come up with this distinction. You know, I think Blue Origin's an interesting company to look at in general because, you know, they are going to be doing a lot of contracting, most likely with their New Glenn. They're setting up the Orbital Reef, though, which will be the first commercial space station, which is super exciting. But also, if you look at SpaceX, it's very similar. SpaceX ferries astronauts to the International Space Station. It also ferries cargo to the International Space Station for NASA. So they are still reliant on the government for contracts and for money, but they are different. They're different than their previous generation, and they're different from traditional space. So these distinctions are important, and they're just super fun too. They make it very interesting. And you know, looking back at Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos, I think he said, he was talking about when he built Amazon, and this isn't a direct quote, but I believe he said when he was making Amazon, the infrastructure existed. There was someone to pick up the package. There was someone to send the package, and it existed. And he just had to put the business in place. And so and then when he talked about Blue Origin, he said the infrastructure doesn't exist. So I'm making the infrastructure. And it makes him sound like a traditional space company, you know, building the infrastructure, building it up into something new. So it is very interesting. We'll see how, you know, history remembers these types of companies that are building space infrastructure.
Yeah, and you quote Jeff Bezos, I have to quote Victor Hugo. That's the saying that the famous French poet, that you cannot kill an idea whose time has come, and new space time has come. So that's also as well, we should not say, okay, new space is irrelevant. Depends in which domain, which business segment, which country are you talking about? Because in certain countries, new space is the only industry, but new space is there. New space is there, it's good, and it the new space of today, 2.0, will be different than the new space in 5 years. Because that the condition of, for instance, if you see this blitzscaling now with the SPACs that we've seen last year, or the influx with private investment, we will see the economic condition in 2 years going to be different than now. And that will certainly also impact that. Or if the successes of Starlink, of OneWeb, or Planet, and so on, that will impact the evolution of the sector. But all I see it positive. You know, we have a growing space economy, which is good. It's good for the one involved in the space sector.
I'm glad I live in the age of a growing space economy, and it's good that we're building, and it's very exciting. It's a good time to be alive in terms of space exploration and space advancement. And we'll see where the future takes us.
Yeah, I would say that it's changing even faster than what you think. And 2021 was a great year in terms of private investment, if that's the topic we've been discussing today. But 2022 gonna be solid. But you will see that There are different investment vehicles that are going to come up. It's going to be very interesting. And maybe this year is going to be the year of delivery for some of these players, so some of these actors. And I think it's going to be interesting. And I'm looking forward to seeing cool results in the year to come. But maybe that could be one of the next show.
Yeah, absolutely. It could definitely be one of the next shows. We'd love to have you back to talk about it. It is going to be an exciting year, and I'm excited to see what happens. You know, we got SLS hopefully taking off. You know, we got Starship from SpaceX. We got plenty of things in the works. It'll be super exciting. James Webb just went up, so it's going to be super exciting. Nikola Peter, thanks for coming on. It was fantastic to have you. Everybody out there listening, if you're listening, you know we're on Spotify. You know, keep us going. Keep us on your listen list. And if you want to check out some more stuff, you can follow us on Instagram at Space Jams. You can see some of our videos on YouTube at Space Jams. I hope you enjoyed, and always remember to keep looking up. You know, man.